Okay, back on the Young Turks. Brett Ehrlich joins us. Hey, what's up, Brett? So, a couple of tweets for you guys. A lot about the Space Force. OnSec writes in, Space Force to fight the aliens before they become illegal aliens. Zanger. So, actually, tomorrow, I believe and I hope I'm going to get to a story about how they're here. Second video has come out with citing a UFO, and it's not us, it's the US military. So it's fascinating, okay?
I'm with it.
Yeah, well, okay, just, you know what, do your best, aliens. Okay, we tried building a wall around space, it didn't work. Okay, J. Thomas Gordy says on the Marine Corps issue, I honestly don't know how anyone can salute this draft-dodging con artist. Well, hear, hear, brother. Chris Bradshaw says, when Dan Quayle misspelled potato, it ended his career. When Trump spells a word wrong, we call it Tuesday. Also very true. And Veronica Escobedo on YouTube Super Chat says about the Space Force, beam him up, Scotty, please. So indeed. Okay, guys, before going to the stories, I just want to remind you again, Allison Hartson is doing a Reddit AMA tomorrow. 9 to 11 Pacific, so make sure you check that out. It's on the subreddit of Sanders for President. And yes, she's a Bernie Sanders type progressive running against Dianne Feinstein. And by the way, go volunteer for her. It takes about 15 seconds to sign up and do however much or as little as you can. You know, sign up for a Facebook page or Twitter and boom, you're a volunteer. It takes about 30 seconds to do that at most. Or you can make just one phone call and it still makes a huge difference. So Allison Hartson, .com/now, AllisonHartson.com/now. Let's get to 2,000 volunteers so that we can take out a corporate Democrat. All right, Brett, what's next?
First off, Stephen Hawking died. John wanted me to mention at the top of the show. Do you have any thoughts about Stephen Hawking? It's kind of a heartbreaking story, but he, I mean, everyone's tweeting out little quotes of his. Just want to take a moment. He died, you know, if you're on the other side of the Dateline, he died on Pi Day. Folks are calling him out for that. That was one tweet that I saw. So
okay, they're calling him out for that. Stephen Hawking, we're calling you out, okay, for dying on Pi Day. So yeah, no, brilliant guy, wonderful guy, smart. So I'm sure conservatives hated him.
Yeah. All right, let's get into the news on the second hour. Okay, Betsy DeVos, she's in charge of the Department of Education. Here's a photo of her to jog your memory. It was reported on this show yesterday. She had a tough time on 60 Minutes explaining and defending her record with Michigan school choice opposite Leslie Stahl. Here's a refresher. Take a look at that video.
Now, has that happened in Michigan? Where in Michigan? This is your home state.
Michigan, yes. Well, there's lots of great options and choices for students here.
Have the public schools in Michigan gotten better?
I don't know. Overall, I can't say overall that they have all gotten better.
The whole state is not doing well.
Well, there are certainly lots of pockets where the students are doing
well. But your argument that if you take funds away, that the schools will get better is not working in Michigan, where you had a huge impact and influence over the direction of the school system here.
I hesitate to talk about all schools in general because schools are made up of individual students attending them.
The public schools here are doing worse than they did.
Michigan schools need to do better. There is no doubt about it.
She knows that she has to keep smizing the whole time.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. She has an incredible ability to smile through anger, like I've never seen before. I rank her number one in the country in being able to smile pleasantly while being internally furious. Like, oh, you're right. You're owning me right now. I look like an idiot. Oh, you caught me again. I don't know what I'm talking about.
That's it. It is the not knowing what she's talking about. And so she tried to defend herself on Twitter. And that aspect of not knowing what she's talking about comes through. Here's a tweet she had to defend her performance. She writes, here's what we shared with 60 Minutes, which of course they didn't show you. Michigan, like much of the nation, isn't doing well enough to prepare students. Scores are stagnant, students need more options, and we must rethink our approach to education. And she attached two charts. Those two charts, which we should have in the next graphic, they show the gray line is, and the, for those at home that are just listening, they have a line that represents the national public average and then the Michigan line. And kind of when Betsy and her friends get in charge of the Michigan education system, you see that Michigan's numbers fall below the national average in both mathematics and reading. And what Betsy draws from this is the conclusion that everyone needs to do better, so we need more of her policies, even though you kind of have a graphical representation that her school choice policies are failing her state compared to the rest of the country.
I believe that's what the kids at home call a self-own. Yeah, so you're like, oh yeah, 60 Minutes didn't show you how stupid I really am. So let me take this opportunity to show you what a miserable failure my ideas have been in Michigan.
Have your opinions of her changed since seeing this response and the 60 Minutes thing? Or does it just, like, how has your opinion changed of her?
So when we first saw the 60 Minutes thing, and then Anna and I talked about it earlier in the week, what came across to me was affluenza. That she's so wealthy that no one has ever asked her to defend her opinions before. She's surrounded by people going, oh, Betsy, you're so right. And what a pleasant smile, Betsy. You're, of course, Betsy. She never had to do her homework. Success was not tied to merit in Betsy DeVos's world or in Donald Trump's world. And no matter how many times Donald Trump went bankrupt, his dad would bail him out. No matter how many classes he failed, his dad would bail him out. So he learned you don't have to do homework. So as president, he doesn't do it, and Betsy DeVos doesn't do it. And so in the case of charter schools, the results are very mixed. And there's no convincing evidence that they do better than public schools. And on the issue that she voluntarily brought up about how they pull public schools up when you take money away from public schools to give to charter schools, there she's flat wrong. No, that it hurts public schools when you take money away from them, which is, and of course, right? But at least make your case, Betsy. And so what you could have done if you wanted to be sufficiently misleading is take one state that actually does well with charter schools, because they exist. And in that case, Arizona. Like Florida does worse, Michigan does worse. There's a lot of states that do worse. Their charter schools do worse than their public schools in some of the instances, right? Or in a lot of the instances. But in Arizona, the charter schools do pretty well. So you could have just said, but Leslie, what about Arizona? Let me tell you the stats. Or after the interview, do your homework. You're the secretary of the whole department, okay? There's like hundreds, maybe I'm sure thousands of people working underneath you. Have one of them do the homework and then send out the tweet.
For me, this behavior just underscores the fact that she's a lobbyist at heart. Because a lobbyist doesn't ever question the goal. And the goal for her is to expand charter schools. Her goal isn't necessarily to do the best for the Department of Education, to do the best for schools at large, and consider other options. Her decision has been made a long time ago because of the people she hangs around. That's part of that affluenza. And she just decides that my job is to make sure that I get this money from the public school system to the people I know who are asking for it. And that's what it is. She spent, there was one amazing op-ed that said, she spent, the DeVos family contributed $1.45 million in the summer of 2016 over the course of 2 months, which means they were giving $25,000 a day to try to get more money away from the public school system and into, they become public schools because they're publicly funded, but to what you would consider to be like a private religious institution. And the trouble with that is she doesn't even open it up for the possibility that you could evaluate these schools properly. Because once you get out of the public school system, which you can at least monitor and test and see clearly into, once you get into the private institutions, they've made it more and more difficult to see how they're doing and how the money's spent, period.
And by the way, that's the second problem. She's a religious fundamentalist. So she thinks, evidence, I don't need any stinking evidence. Whatever I was told by my leader is correct, period. End of the question. So don't bother me with your facts and logic. In fact, look at this one comment she made in that video that you guys watched earlier. She said, I hesitate to talk about all schools in general because schools are made up of individual students attending them. Well, by that logic, you could never evaluate whether charter schools do well or private schools do well or public schools, because they're made up of the individual students that attend them. So you can't judge any school. How are you going to be education secretary if you can't judge the performance of any of the schools?
So in that respect, since she's so fundamentally against what her job is she the most Trump appointee?
It's an impossible question. It's a murderer's row of idiots and misfits.
Why is she still there? So we've got, it was at the
because
beginning
she's pro-Russia. That's why.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, the DeVos family works in collaboration with the Russians. Her brother, Eric Prince, is the one that went to Seychelles Island and met with the Russian officials. And they also funded Trump's campaign and the Republican Party. Her main qualification is not about education. It's not even that she's a religious fundamentalist. It's that she's a donor and her family's perfectly comfortable working with the Russians.
Sarah, well, this is also the same person who said that you need guns in schools to protect them against grizzly bear attacks. Already rolled back protections for, you know, advocating rolling back protections for people with massive student loan debt.
Well, Brett, come on, let's be fair.
I get it.
So the school shootings or grizzly bear attacks, what's the bigger danger in the schools? I can't quite tell. That would require evidence, and I couldn't possibly look into evidence.
Good God.
Okay, let's just take a quick break here. When we come back, United Nations takes on Facebook. Now, I'm an enormous United Nations advocate, but I think they're wrong. And it's a really sensitive topic and very hard to talk about, but I think it's a very important conversation. So let's do that when we come back. All right, back on A Young Turks, Cenk and Brett with you. Corey Kroll writes in on Twitter using hashtag TYT Live. I'm not sure who said it, but someone charged Betsy DeVos with defensive smiling. That's good. That's exactly right. Tara McSorley says, Cenk, why are you giving Betsy DeVos advice? What is this, Con 101? Love you, man, but when I was talking about how she could just quote the Arizona numbers, it's not that hard, right? All right, members of the day are Roman Macko. How is that for an awesome name?
That is better than mine.
And Elizabeth Johnson. Okay. How is that for an American name? Okay, or a British name. So Roman Macko and Elizabeth Johnson are members of the day. Yesterday we had a post game where Anna challenged me to a comedy off, where she does stand up and then I do stand up and the audience judges who won. Well, we might do that for members. Well, certainly we talked about it for members. So check that out at tytnetwork.com/join. Tonight, Ben Mankiewicz is on Old School. Ben and I are going to go old school. It's going to be great. And I just got early results for our poll on the dumbest thing Donald Trump has done in the last 24 hours.
It's a great poll.
And I am not going to share them with you. They are surprising, though. I was like, really? Huh, interesting. Okay. So, but the good news for you is if you go to tytnetwork.com/dumbass and you vote, it tells you the results. Okay. So check that out. All right, fun for everybody. Now, I got the next story for you guys. United Nations investigators are calling out Facebook for what is happening in Myanmar. So the Rohingya are being massacred, unfortunately, at a tremendous rate. First of all, more than 688,000 Rohingya refugees have already fled Myanmar to go to Bangladesh. So it is an absolutely epic catastrophe there, and not a lot of help from the rest of the world. Certainly, the American government is nearly non-existent in our concern about that issue. A lot of evidence that people are being butchered, massacred, institutionalized rape in the country. Now, it happens to be Buddhists in this case who are driving out the Muslim minority. It's almost as if it has to do with socioeconomic, geographic, and political issues rather than race or religion. Okay, but we've talked about that in the past. We're a rare show that actually covers this issue a lot. But and I'm an enormous advocate of the United Nations overall and the UN Human Rights Council. But here, when investigator Yang Healy, everything is done through Facebook in Myanmar, and I'm afraid that Facebook has now turned into a beast and not what is originally intended. I happen to think that that's unfair, and so I'm overwhelmingly concerned about what's happening there. But blaming Facebook is like blaming radio for the Rwandan genocide. in that case, the people who did the genocide organized over the radio, and they would tell people, okay, here's where the Tutsis are, and you should attack them, and they're the worst, etc. Back in the day in Germany, they did propaganda in other forms of media. It reminds me of when everybody's panicked over the Craigslist killer. Like, well, in the old days, he would have just gone through the Yellow Pages, but nobody ever called him the Yellow Pages killer. So I get it, I understand the concern, but when they tell Facebook that you have to cut down on hate speech, and boy, I mean, I can't tell you how much I want this, these massacres and what is now being called a genocide to end. And we've spoken forcefully about it over and over again. And shutting down particular pages, okay, but blaming Facebook, and I'm not sure it's okay. If it's saying go murder people, it's definitely okay. That is not acceptable, right? But when you start getting into political points of view, I think it gets into really hard territory. You're blaming Facebook for being a media outlet, but it is what it is. They're going to organize. Facebook, you're just blaming them for being popular in a sense. So I don't want them shutting down unpopular opinions, although in Myanmar, unfortunately, it's not an unpopular opinion. And I don't know how you deal with the government in that context.
It's just a matter for me of, does Facebook first have standards that are smart and right and protect the kind of free speech that you're talking about, while not just creating a legalized way for people to do illegal things, not bad, good or bad things, but like illegal things that we agree are wrong to do. And then secondly, are they enforcing it properly? That's where I come down on it. I am all for, I always come down with ACLU on stuff like this, where it's just like, listen, there's people I don't agree with and there's terrible things. That said, legally there is hate speech in America, which is different from, it's, if you have certain kinds of hate speech, it gets into illegal territory when it's, I think, threatening, you know, incipient violence or something like that. Then, and there's a specific threat of violence. In that sense, it becomes illegal. And only in that sense would I police certain kinds of speech. That's one thing. But if it's like a group is taking advantage of a certain form of media, you're right, that's a timeless, you know, a historically standard way that people mobilize their own political movements, and sometimes they turn violent, sometimes they don't. I do second that concern that we need to maintain those utilities open so that the good side can use them as well.
Yeah, so look, there are some bright lines that are relatively straightforward and easy. Incitement to specific violence, you can't do that. So Facebook shutting that down makes perfect sense. Go kill Bob, Bob's the wrong religion, the wrong race, or we just don't like Bob. You can't have that on Facebook. Everybody knows that, Facebook knows that, they shut that down, right? But the rest of it gets really hard, and for all of these social media outlets, look, and I'll be upfront with you guys know Facebook's a partner of ours, but that's not why I'm saying this. I'm telling you that all of these social media platforms have a nearly impossible job. So okay, illegal, that's a bright line. Maybe in America that's a bright line and that's easy, but when the Chinese government says it is illegal to speak out against the Chinese government in any way, shape, or form, shut down all political dissidents, not so easy, right? In the case of Myanmar, it might not be illegal because the government is backing the massacres.
Right.
So that's also not easy. Now the last part, and the core of this, which is shutting down hate speech, I don't want Facebook or any of these platforms to be in that business. Now, I'm a progressive, so I'm massively against hate speech. It's easy, super easy for me to say shut down hate speech. That benefits me and it doesn't benefit other people. But where do you draw the line? So the Buddhists in Myanmar that are fundamentalists and that are doing these specific attacks, obviously not all Buddhists in Myanmar and obviously not all Buddhists across the world. We're not idiot right wingers, we don't make generalizations like that. But the particular fundamentalists that are doing this in Myanmar, what do they say? They say Muslims are the problem. What do right wingers in this country say? Muslims are the problem, including our president. What are we gonna do, ban our president from Facebook? He said we should ban all Muslims from the country until we figure out what the hell is going on. And what's happening in Rohingya? They're literally throwing out the Muslims from the country as they, I guess, figure out what's going on and while they continue to murder them.
Right. These are the questions of Facebook. First of all, if you're living in a place like Myanmar, it doesn't have the same kind of infrastructure and alternative media distribution mechanisms that you have elsewhere in the world. This is a dynamic that is everywhere. Where there is limited infrastructure, certain things that you would take for granted or discredit or whatever suddenly become very important. I did studies on, like, in Alabama, it's a non-collective bargaining state. They shouldn't have unions, but, you know, throughout the early 2000s, all the way up through the early 2000s, the teachers union was like the strongest means of political organization in the state. Shouldn't have been on paper, but they had very little other infrastructure politically, and they had teachers everywhere. So this is the means by which people rally around a cause. And then in Facebook, it seems like in Myanmar, that's the only thing. And then, you know, things like the media, the radio. You said the radio. You relied on the radio and fireside chats from the president and one of the few, you know, radio broadcasts to give you the truth. It has always been difficult when you can't really rely on the truth to come from the radio. And when people are relying on the truth to come from Facebook, which is their only means of social media, then I would shift around some of my priorities while still focusing on maintaining freedom of speech, but making sure that there are certain lines that are drawn so that it doesn't get taken advantage of. But I can't say that just because someone said something mean on Facebook, that's what translated to the violence. It was the violence that I should focus on.
Yeah, and lastly on it, guys, if Facebook in that sense, especially in that particular country, has gotten so popular that they're basically a mirror to humanity. So when we're yelling at Facebook, we're basically yelling at ourselves. Like, oh, everybody is on Facebook and some people are doing bad things on Facebook. Yeah, that's kind of how humanity works. So I'm, again, not to minimize Myanmar. I think it's one of the biggest problems in the world and we do almost nothing about it. But I'm not sure that this is the productive approach. Okay, all right, let's go to the next story, Brett.
Next story is about the public sentiment about gun control. Public sentiment has shifted on gun control, specifically within the ranks of the NRA. According to a recent study, 69% of NRA members expressed support for comprehensive background checks. A proposal to implement universal background checks would apply to all gun sales rather than just purchases made at licensed retailers. Now, this is, what does that mean? When I see it, to me, it says that this is kind of against the gun show loophole. This is trying to get to comprehensive background checks no matter where you try to get a gun. And that is 69% of people that are NRA members are in support of that. Reactions?
Yeah, so I've been telling you this, guys, for a long time. And there's a reason why, because there was an earlier poll in the last massacre, or actually not even the last massacre, several massacres ago. And they did a poll just like this when they're trying to get federal background checks to pass in Congress. In fact, one of the numbers in this poll is slightly lower than the one in that poll from that massacre where 93% of all Americans wanted federal background checks. But and understand what it means. The background check is, right now there's a loophole. If you go to a Walmart, you go to a licensed retailer, you have to go through a background check. Everybody's familiar with that. But you can, instead of going to Walmart or whatever, you can just go to a private gun show and then there's no check. There's no regulations.
It's insane to me.
So a criminal can get it. Somebody with a giant rap sheet can get it. A violent person can get it. Terrorists getting it. Anybody can get it because there's no check on it at all. So that is why even NRA members, 7 out of 10 of them go, wait, I had to do a background check. Why shouldn't you be able to do a background check? Because most of them didn't buy it at a private gun show. Most of them bought it at retailers.
And these are the moments where you're like, good, we all agree. Can we do something about it?
Yeah.
And then Trump says, sure, that sounds like it makes sense because I heard a number and it makes sense. And then he disappears and talks to the NRA. And then he reappears and is like, actually, no, we can't do any of that. That's frustrating.
So, overall numbers, 89% of respondents who don't own a firearm said, yeah, of course do background checks on people buying guns. Otherwise, we have no idea who's buying them. But my favorite stat is 78% of gun owners.
Right.
78, if you can't pass a bill to do federal background checks on guns, when 78% of gun owners say, for God's sake, do it, That means we don't live in a democracy. Because theoretically, the reason they're not doing it is to protect the gun owners and their rights. But the gun owners say, no, I want you to do the background check. There's only one set of people in the country who don't want the background check. Those are the people who sell guns.
Right.
So we're at their mercy, no matter how many people agree.
The Second Amendment is itself qualified. It says the well-regulated militia. This doesn't even consider the militia thing. It's just like, have any regulations, check someone's background. That's totally like regulated, is in the you know, amendment. It's frustrating. Among those who don't own guns, 79% support a firearms purchase database. Among only half gun owners back such a proposal, the level of support drops to 31% among NRA members, which I was surprised it was that high, that NRA members, a third of them are fine with a database. I saw on the Washington Post had an article where they said that this level of like 69, 67% support for stricter gun control regulation, it hasn't been at that level since 1993. And you know what happened in 1994? The assault weapons ban. Something that was in effect for a decade. I keep saying it on this show. It was in effect for a decade. Ronald Reagan felt the need to write in to Congress at the time and say that he supported it. Get the assault weapons ban in place. Let's get another one back on the books.
Yeah, you can't do it until you get money out of politics. Wolf-pack.com/go, okay? Go and volunteer for Wolfpack, donate to Wolfpack, do whatever you can to get money out of politics, because the gun manufacturers just bought all of our politicians. And they don't give a damn what we think, and they don't even give a damn what NRA members think. NRA members, what do you get? Are you guys the one cutting the checks? No, the weapons manufacturers cut the checks. You know, I mean, I don't even want to put thoughts in their heads, but I just realized, look, the other weapons manufacturers that cut the checks and that that we listen to nonstop, or politicians do, is defense contractors. We're helping the Saudis bomb the living crap out of Yemen. You want to talk about massacres and civilian deaths on top of deaths, but they're in Yemen, so we don't care. But now the guns are here, we're killing our own kids, and we still don't, or our politicians still don't care. Then I thought, wait till the defense contractors think, why not start bigger weapons here? Like, there's no check, nobody's at home, there's no cops. You know what happens when there's no cops? The robbers go wild. So here we are.
I hate it. With the other things, like the loopholes, the federal background check loophole, if it takes, it's a 3-day whatever, if it takes longer than that, they just give you the gun. And that's how Dylann Roof got a gun. It's frustrating. Just follow through on the promises you made already. We'll start there.
Okay, what's next?
All right, next. Prince Philip is worth more than the Queen. That's at least on the show The Crown on Netflix. It was reported executives at Left Bank Pictures, the production company behind The Crown, revealed that Matt Smith, the actor who plays Prince Philip on the show, earned more than Clara Foy, who plays the Queen on the Netflix series. This was brought to people's attention. There was pushback. Suzanne Mackey, who runs that, who is a creative director for that production company, said going forward, no one gets paid more than the Queen. But people were upset on Twitter, like this one, who said Matt Smith was paid more for The Crown than Claire Foy. So just like, let that sink in. And The Crown is amazing, high quality TV, but every fan knows Claire Foy, the standout performer that made it shine, Her portrayal as the young Queen Elizabeth is a very top tour de force acting performance. No one should have been paid more than her.
So, Brett, I'm a little conflicted about this. I'll tell you why.
I'm not. I'm probably with what you're about to say.
Okay, so we're nitpicking every single show and movie. And so this person was paid that. But these are case by case. So let me explain it this way. If you're coming out of law school in your first year, basically lawyer, associate, going into the main firms in, pick a city, Seattle, New York, DC, it doesn't matter, right? There's this, and if you're not a lawyer, you probably don't know this, but there's a standard rate that everyone gets. And it might depend on the size of the firm, and it certainly depends on the city that you're in, but it's a standard rate. If for some reason those standard rates were different for men and women, I'd be like, whoa, what is, why? Why would you pay men more? That's crazy. Or pay women more, good luck with that, right? But that doesn't happen, and it shouldn't happen. And it used to happen, but it doesn't happen anymore, largely speaking. But if you found instances of it, you should definitely do something about it, because there's no reason for that. Whereas acting jobs are all case by case. But the reason, Brett, I'm conflicted on the other side is these are not well-known actors. It's Matt Smith.
He was Doctor Who.
Okay.
And there's a lot of co-productions that happened with the BBC. And so it is more the London-based company. I don't know exactly where this one is, but usually it's like the London-based company that originally financed the project is like, let's look around England and find our favorite actors. And former, you know, Doctor Who is a giant thing, and Clara Foy, they just like found her. Not really, but she, you know, everyone who's gotten their first big break has been acting for dozens of years. But he was more expensive. His quote was, in my opinion, no doubt more expensive because he was Doctor Who.
Well, see, that's important. I don't know these particular actors and their background, which goes to the point I was making. They all have a different background, and right. So they command a different price. Now, but again, the reason, but I'll go back to why I'm conflicted on it, not just because I don't happen to know Matt Smith, but because it is happening awfully frequently in Hollywood. And what might be happening is the assumptions that people make about the scale that these actors are getting might be based on stereotypes that are in their subconscious, and they don't even realize it. They think, well, that's a guy that's a lead actor and should be paid a lot. Oh, actress, that's, you know, that's easier to find, or and they might not realize that they're doing the discrimination. But again, having said that, it is a case by case basis. It's not like they're all being hired out of medical school or law school.
So with that in mind, what kinds of things can we point to kind of say, well, is progress being made? You saw at the end of Frances McDormand's acceptance speech, she did the whole thing about the inclusion rider. There have been folks out there in Hollywood who have stepped forward, the inclusion rider dies. And they are Brie Larson stepped forward, she's gonna be Captain Marvel. Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, who have been touch and go with women's issues in terms of how they're perceived in the spotlight. Feig, the guy who directed Ghostbusters, and Michael B. Jordan, who is everyone's favorite right now. And Ashley Judd called out her own agency. She said, I would like for this agency that represents her, the talent agency, that represents me to be 50-50 male, female, including all ethnicities, races, and sexual orientations. And the 50-50 needs to be included in all decision-making levels. She's taking no prisoners, which means they would have to add two females at the top of her agency. So she's like, all right, here's my inclusion rider at my agency. And it's the same agency that I'm pretty sure was the same agency that represented that did the deal for All the Money in the World, that got money for Mark Wahlberg and not for Michelle Williams.
So I think that we're being consistent here, and I think it is a nuanced issue that we presented in that way and showed you both sides of it. Now, if you're on the side of no, this is not a real issue, and how dare they do this? Well, wait a minute. Now the right wing is totally in favor of capitalism, right? Well, this is capitalism. People with leverage are using that leverage to demand certain things. Now, some people use leverage to demand Bentleys and special colored M&Ms, right? Mm-hmm. And these folks are demanding diversity. Well, capitalism, it's a bitch.
Here's just as we're talking about Netflix, the CEO of Netflix, Reed Hastings, was asked about his inclusion rider issues. And he said, we're not so big on doing everything through agreements. We're trying to do things creatively, whatever that means. But in the meantime, Yahoo reports, Netflix's diversity problem extends to its own employees with no black members on its main board, which has 70-30 gender split in favor of men, and only 4% of the workforce made up of black people.
So look, I think the bottom line is we gotta get there, and we have to be cognizant of the issues overall. We have to be cognizant of the stereotypes and actions we might take that are both conscious and subconscious. It doesn't mean that every single issue that is pointed out is correct, or that you have to take immediate action in, I don't know, firing half the people on these companies' boards and replacing them with other people. But now the pendulum has swung in terms of leverage, and so people are within their rights to demand that kind of diversity, and let's see where the chips fall.
There you go. We gotta take a break right now after that story.
Yep. We'll be right back. Back on the Young Turks, Beppa writes in on Twitter, I went over recently to see the Rohingya refugee camps to provide them with clothes and food. The stories will haunt me for the rest of my life. So those are the best people on earth that go to help in these refugee camps. And now I'm going to go to YouTube Super Chat. A lot of you are now starting to use that, which I love. It also helps the show. Thank you, guys. John Powell with an excellent point. Cops kill many innocent people. Imagine teachers. So Jonathan Solomon says the Second Amendment was to let the southern states keep their slavery enforcement squads. Clear as day in the Madison Papers, time for repeal so we can join the rest of the developed world. Yeah, they were, to be fair, it also, they had real militias in the north as well, but in the south they were the slave patrols, and that's why the south pushed for the Second Amendment. That is true. And finally, Rick Ling sends on YouTube Super Chat, reports Bolton to be named National Security Advisor, Pruitt to be Acting Attorney General, Rick Perry to VA Department, Kelly replaced by Mulvaney, Ray Washburn to Energy. I've seen half those reports as well. Now it's just a person writing in here, so take it with a grain of salt, and there are a lot of rumors floating around. If Bolton, John Bolton, is our National Security Advisor, brace for impact. We're going to war, and lots of war. So that's as bad a pick as you could possibly imagine. Okay, Brett, what's the last story?
The last story is there is a candidate for state legislature in Maine who is apologizing for calling one of the survivors of the shooting at Stoneman Douglas High School a skinhead lesbian. The name of the candidate is Leslie Gibson. And this was a tweet that has since been taken down, but originally it was, there is nothing about the skinhead lesbian that impresses me, and there is nothing that she has to say. And then further, he said, Leslie Gibson claimed, according to the Huffington Post, Gonzalez should not be called a survivor because she was, quote, in a completely different part of the school during the shooting.
Okay.
And not just her, he also went after David Hogg, another student, and he said Hogg doesn't get a pass when he blatantly lies. The thing he was lying about is saying that there are political figures who are owned by the NRA. The apology.
That's a lie. That's hilarious.
It's absolutely bearing out across the country right now. The apology says, I would like to extend to you my most sincere apology for how I addressed you. It was wrong and unacceptable. You are doing work that is important to you. I would like to extend my hand in friendship and understanding to you. A bit of a 180.
So, couple of notes here. First, the full quote that originally got him in trouble was, there's nothing about the skinhead lesbian that impresses me, and there's nothing that she has to say unless you are frothing at the mouth moonbat. Okay? Now, Gibson and any other conservatives allowed to disagree with Emma Gonzalez and the survivors. You don't have to have the same position as them on the Second Amendment or gun rights or gun control, but is it too much to ask to respect them after having gone through that experience and say they also have a perspective, a valid perspective, instead of just throwing random insults at them and especially directed at who they are rather than what they think?
Also, they're kids. What has happened to people that they're in this bubble, in this case of the NRA, where they feel that it is a good thing to go after children? There was someone in Florida, Representative Elizabeth Porter, when she was arguing against the state law in Florida that increased gun control regulations. She said, we've been told that we need to listen to the children and do what the children ask. She says, do we allow the children to tell us we should pass a law that says no homework? She compared wanting to stay alive, to at least change some gun control regulations, to kids not wanting to do their homework. Like, where do you have to be mentally to get to that place?
Well, I know where you have to be. You have to be in a place where you can cash that check from the NRA. And so she claims that the adults are more responsible. Does it look like it? Have the adults stopped the massacres at the schools? No. Columbine was 19 years ago. We've had decades of massacre after massacre overall in the country, and particularly in our schools. Newtown, Columbine, this, let alone shooting after shooting that you don't hear about. And And so the adults have not solved it, partly because they're corrupt. And so Gibson, if there is a liar in this story, as he ironically accuses her of being a liar, it is the politicians who claim, oh no, the checks that I get from campaign contributors don't affect me at all. How dare you besmirch my adult reputation by saying that I would do something for the money? Yeah, I think you're doing something for the money. And I don't know in Gibson's case if he's taking checks from the NRA or not, but even if he's not, certainly others are. Thousands of politicians across the country are, and that's why they're not doing anything. And it takes apparently kids to call him out on it.
Yeah. He's running unopposed. Democrats have till Thursday to come up with a candidate. Independence by June 1st.
Get in the race. Kick him out of office. All right, we're done, guys. Rebel headquarters with one of the students next. Bye-bye.